We are going to spend the month of December going through really just one verse of Scripture. We'll take a week off for the musical on the 16th there, but we're going to look at the names of Jesus found in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. Let's go ahead and read the verse together, and then we'll start with today's name. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. When Isaiah would write this verse and this prediction, he was spurring the nation of Israel to think forward to a future event. What is this future event that he's trying to get them to think of? Verse 7. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. He's writing here to remind the nation of Israel that God will set up his kingdom, that God will keep his promises. Now, as Isaiah is writing these verses in chapter 9, he's about 800 years before the coming of Christ. So this period in Israel's history was extremely, extremely tumultuous. The Assyrians are on the march. They're taking countries into captivity by the droves. And Isaiah's prophecy is to give the nation of Israel some hope, something that they desperately needed. What was this hope? Well, there was going to be a child that was going to be born that would fulfill the Davidic covenant. And he would bear the titles Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Now, as you read this in our English version, it reads something like this. Wonderful, comma, Counselor, comma, Mighty God, comma, Everlasting Father, comma, Prince of Peace, period. But when you read this in the original, it's actually four sets of two noun components. So it literally reads Wonderful Counselor together, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Peace Prince. Okay? They're just eight nouns hooked together into four groups. And these are really, really important because they all remind us of four absolute truths about who God is. So this morning, we're going to look at the first one, Wonderful Counselor. The way I want to do this, and I'm not sure if I'll do this every week, but this week, we're going to take each word individually, we'll define it, tell us what it means, and then how it applies to our lives. So the first word, wonderful, it's a word we use in maybe common, ordinary speech, right? You get done with a good meal and you go, man, that was wonderful. You get done listening to maybe the handbells or the choir, or I'm guessing, but in a few weeks we'll get done at the end of the musical and be like, man, that was wonderful, right? It's encouraging, and we think, you know, you get done, my wife makes cheesecake, and I get done eating a piece, and I go, man, that was wonderful. Or we were just on vacation, and we went to Michigan, and we got Donna's Donuts, one of the best donut shops in the world. And as I get done eating that donut, I go, man, that was wonderful. But that is not how this word is used in this verse. So this word in this passage literally means incomprehensible. So we could say it this way, we don't understand it. Now, when we think of this as an adjective in the verse, it really throws it off because it's really a noun. So his phrase really is more like Wonder Counselor. Or, and maybe a longer way to say it, is to the one we can't explain who gives us wisdom. This is what Isaiah is trying to tell us about the Messiah. See, the Messiah is going to cause us to be full of wonder. It's a weighty use of the word. jump back with me to Judges 13. The first time in Scripture, and really the most familiar time maybe to us, that this word shows up. Judges 13, verse 18. Now, we are familiar with the story that this context is found in, but maybe we're not thinking so much about the specific point. But we're talking about here in the story of Samson. And Samson's father is having a conversation with an angelic being who he's going to later refer to as God. Okay, so he's having a theophany. That means he's talking to God, who showed up visibly to speak to him. And he asks God in verse 17, "Then Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, 'What is your name, that when your words come to pass, we may honor?'" He says to this being, "Listen, when what you say comes true, who do I give credit to?" Verse 18, "The angel of the Lord said to him, 'Why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful?'" Literally, this verse reads, "Why do you ask my name, seeing it is incomprehensible? You can't understand my name." See, God reveals himself in ways that we can understand him, but those are just the bits and pieces that we can process. God is so wise, so big, so powerful, so holy, that our finite minds can't wrap ourselves around the truth of who God is. So God explains himself in ways that simplify it. We do this with our kids, by the way. Right? Kids will ask us, "Well, how something works?" Right? "Dad, how does a car work?" "Well, you start the ignition, the engine runs, and it powers the wheels, and you go down the road." All of that is true, by the way. But that is really, really basic. Right? I mean, is it a diesel engine? Is it a gas engine? Is it fired by spark plugs or by compression? Right? What is the ratio? Like, there's so many things that you could explain to that. When I have things fixed in my house and air conditioning, Larry comes over and he always tries to tell me what he's fixing, and I have no idea what he's talking about, right? He'd be like, "Oh, it's that part." I'm like, "Great, that must be it," right? Because I don't know anything about the insides of an air conditioning unit, right? And so here's God, and he's saying to us, "Listen, I really can't describe myself to you, because if I do, you're not going to get it anyway, because I'm wonderful. I'm incomprehensible." The point being made here is that God describes himself, or ascribes to himself, the name of mystery and wonder. In the same way, he gives himself holiness as one of his essential names. "I am the Holy One," God says. Well, God's not being called Holy One. But because his holiness is so much a part of his being, his attribute becomes a descriptive name of who he is. Right? He is the Holy One. No one else gets this name. No one else has holiness compared to God. No one else has wonder like God has it. He is incomprehensible. So the question then is, as Isaiah says about God here in verse 6, he says, "Listen, you are the wonderful counselor." Why is God wonderful? Well, we could spend days on this topic. I summarize it in two, hopefully, easy to understand points. First, wonderful life. As Isaiah is writing chapter 9, verse 6, he's looking forward to a future time when God will become flesh, when the Messiah will come to earth. He will do what God has promised to do. So he's looking specifically ahead to the messianic coming of Jesus, right? Now, he doesn't know Jesus. He doesn't know all of the details. He's just prophesying into the future, right? And so what do we know about Jesus? Well, Jesus demonstrated a wonderful life in various ways when he was on earth, beginning with his conception in the womb of a virgin. He is, simply put, incomprehensible because his birth was different than every other birth. We often chuckle or laugh at things that happen in our lives that's like, "Didn't see that one coming," right? Our sister-in-law, Alicia, she's pregnant. And so we're going to visit them, and we saw them over Thanksgiving. And she's like, "They've been to the doctor. They're going to find out soon what the gender of the baby will be." And, And I keep giving her a time. I'm like, I'm praying you have twins. And she's like, well, we know it's not twins. I'm like, yeah, but I had a friend who went to the doctor, who had the ultrasound, who her heart to beat. And then when she went to have the baby, they're like, guess what? There's two, right? Because you go, how could an ultrasound, how could that little thing we put on the belly, and when you hear the little heartbeat, like, how could we miss all of that, right? Well, it seems, you know, that's kind of incomprehensible, but it happens, right? It's not unique just to our friends. It's happened to other people. But Jesus' birth is not just unique as in like, oh, you know, some people have it, but not that many. Jesus is unique because his birth was one of a kind. He was born of a virgin. Second, his life is wonderful because he showed us he is wonderful and is powerful to heal. Have you just thought about what Jesus did when he was on earth? See, the apostles wrote for us what we refer to as the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But even in the Gospels, they tell us, listen, if we recorded all of the events in which Jesus did, there wouldn't be enough room to record all of these. And sometimes you'll read a passage and it'll say, and Jesus healed so-and-so and many others. Or it'll say, and healed all those who came to him. Now just pause for a moment and think about the fact that they summarized all of Jesus' healings that day in, he healed everyone who came to him. Now, if you were the 50th person in line, and you couldn't walk, and your friends dragged you up to Jesus, and Jesus healed you, you wouldn't be like, oh, that was the 50th healing today. That wasn't very impressive. No, you'd be just as excited as the first 49 people who had been healed. Right? We just made it through Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, where everyone was thankful the day before. That was beating each other up for an item that you could have bought the day before for $20 more. But we had Black Friday and people stand in line forever. Why? Because they want a good deal on a TV or whatever it is. Right? And we look at that being, that drawing of stuff. And imagine these people waiting in line to see Jesus. And the apostles just kind of skim over it. Yeah, he healed everybody. Even Paul, he's on the island, right? And it says it heals everybody in the island. It's like a footnote. Yeah, it was just some healing. Just stop for a moment. Imagine today, there's Jesus, and he's just walking through like St. Jude's Children's Hospital. And he's just healing everybody. You wouldn't be like, oh yeah, he just healed some people. You wouldn't summarize it into this little tidbit. But see, for the apostles, this wasn't why Jesus came. Jesus didn't just come to make people not be sick. He didn't come just to heal their physical body. So this is really kind of insignificant. But if you stop about it, you go, this is really incomprehensible. That this guy can just heal anything. Not just healing anything, but he can do whatever he wants. He can speak it into existence. The next thing about his wonderful life was he was perfect. This, in and of itself, is the thing that might be the hardest to understand about Jesus. He never sinned. He never did something for the wrong motive, with the wrong motive. He never did something while on the inside he was, you know, grumpy or angry. When he stubbed his toe, he rejoiced. He was a carpenter, so when he hit his thumb with the hammer, he blessed God for feeling in his thumb. I don't know. Like, just walk through all of just the normal events in life and then go, he never responded incorrectly. That's mind-blowing. I've said this before, but imagine being Jesus' brothers. We often look at Mary and go, man, Mary was blessed. She got to be the mother of Jesus. Imagine being Mary. Imagine never correcting your child. And if you did, you were wrong. Right? Just think about all of the things that go into this. When we talk about his perfect life, this isn't something simple that's like, oh, he was perfect. Right? We when we talk about perfection, oftentimes in our life, our basis for perfection is really, really low. That's the perfect car. Or that was the perfect vacation. Or that was the perfect gift. Fill in the blank. Well, it wasn't perfect. I mean, it was just really good, right? Jesus wasn't just really good. He was perfect. What else about his wonderful life? Last thing I put here, he raised people from the dead. Pause and think about this for a moment. Not only could he heal, not only could he live without sinning, he could tell dead people to come back to life. Now, I don't know about you, but this would cause me to have some questions. You're standing at the opening of the grave, and Jesus says, Lazarus, come forth. Remember when I was a little kid, an evangelist said, you know why he said Lazarus, right? Because if he hadn't put his name in front of it, everyone would have walked out, right? All the dead people would have come out. He said, no, I just want Lazarus right now. The rest of you, you can stay dead, right? Here comes Lazarus, and he comes out. And he goes in, and they're all laughing, like, the girl's dead. And Jesus is like, no, she's sleeping. Because his power gave him the authority to command life and death. Now, we stop and think about this. That's pretty hard to comprehend. I have done over 30 funerals since I moved to Mountain Home. Over 30 funerals. And not once has someone been like, don't cry. They're just sleeping. Stand up. Right? And if they did, we'd have to be like, you forgot your medication this morning, right? Because we don't possess that power. We are not like Jesus. He had a wonderful life. The next thing about him that is wonderful is his teaching. Once again, we could spend a long time here this morning. I want to summarize it really briefly by saying that Jesus taught many things that are counterintuitive to the human mind. When Jesus taught, he was teaching truths, but truths that just are not how we think normally. Let me start. Blessed are those who mourn. Right? Hey, listen, if you have a lot of sorrow in your life, you're blessed. You'd be like, that's not how we normally look at it. Right? When I tell people, there's a group of us on Facebook who are pastors, and the one pastor put on there, middle of the summer, he goes, hey, I've been at my church for 7 years. He's a younger guy. He's in his early, mid-20s now. He started pastoring in the church when he was 20, 21. Now he's like 28 or so. He says, I'm about to do my first funeral, and I'm nervous. And I said to him, I'm like, yeah, I'd love to only have to do one funeral every 7 years, right? No one says to me, hey, listen to all those funerals, man, you're lucky. Yeah, I love doing funerals. Funerals are great. No. When we talk about mourning and death, we talk about it even in hope-filled Christianity. Even when we know people who know Jesus and they die, mourning still is painful. It still hurts. We don't think of it as a blessing. And Jesus says, listen, blessed are they that mourn. Second, he says, I'll rejoice and be glad in persecution. Hey, listen, when people persecute you, be happy about it. Rejoice in it. That's not my first thought when I'm being persecuted. My first thought is not, wow, that was awesome. Let's do that again. Why? Because that's not how our body reacts. It's counterintuitive to us. Paul is writing the book of Philippians, and he's doing it from jail. And the whole theme of the book of Philippians is joy. One of the reasons why that book stands out so much to us is because it's just not how we think. It's just not how we live. The third thing I put in here, and really the last one is kind of summarize this. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Stop for a moment. I mean, Jesus says, love your neighbor. And you go, okay, that's good. I love my neighbor. I mean, the Jews are listening to this. They're like, yeah, we like our neighbors because our neighbors are all Jews. Right? And then he gives the story of the Good Samaritan. And he says, who was his neighbor? Well, it wasn't the religious people who walked by first. It was the Samaritan who bound up his wounds, who paid for him to get well. Listen, love your enemies. Who are your enemies? Well, sometimes we go, I don't have any enemies. Well, that may be true. You may not, you may not be like mortal enemies where you just hate each other. But think about enemies in the context of the people you would rather not be around. Then ask yourself, do you do good to them? Now, it's interesting that this phrase doesn't say, don't do bad to them. Because that's how we do it. We go, well, I didn't punch him in the face. Right? Bonus points for me. God says, nope. The verse doesn't say, don't be a jerk. The verse says, do good. Now, honestly, this is where we go, I don't know if that's what he really meant. Like, I'm not being mean to them, but I'm just not, I'm going to ignore them. Yeah, you can ignore them, but that's not loving your enemies. That's not doing good to those who persecute you and hate you. Jesus' life is wonderful. He's awe-inspiring. He's superior to any other kind of thing that we would think of wonderful. Why? Because he is perfect in every way. So if he's wonderful, then the next noun in this name is counselor. What is counseling? Well, this word was the same title that we get in ancient Israel. The counselor was portrayed as a wise king. We would refer to this as Solomon as a good example, who gave guidance to his people. To think of counselor in this phrase, it's more like there's a guy who has wisdom, who gives to people who are searching for wisdom. Okay, so if Jesus is wonderful, if he's incomprehensible, and we tie this with counselor, we get this image of who Jesus is and how glorious he is, because his counseling reveals two things about who he is. First, he needs no guidance. He needs no input. Isaiah is going to use the same word in 28:29 to describe the Lord. This also comes from the Lord of hosts. He is wonderful in counsel and excellent in wisdom. Why is Jesus so different than everyone else? Well, John 2:25 tells us that Jesus knows the heart of man. It says, and he had no need that anyone should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. There is God's ability, his knowledge knows things that you've never spoken out loud. The other thing I put in here, we could spend all time, I've already preached the message on this text, Isaiah 40:13-14. He is all knowledge. And Isaiah 40, when it's talking about who God is, it says to him, and who has given God any understanding? Who's ever been his counselor, right? Because he is not just truth. He's not just wisdom. He is knowledge. He is wisdom. And to make this point make sense to us, it's not just like God knows all of the answers. He is the answer. When I preached through this message in Isaiah 40, I don't know, 2012 or so, when we were going through this on a missions month, I told you the story of a guy that used to be on ESPN. The show was called Stump the Schwab. And the show was great because this guy who was on the show, he's not like any TV personality you would ever know. He's just a nerd. Okay, so at the time, he was the chief statistician for ESPN. So the guy is, he's not very like great personality or anything. He just knows every sports fact ever. And the game show was simple. The Schwab would sit at a desk, and they would bring in three people who were sportscasters for radio or for TV channels, and they could win money if they could answer questions that the Schwab would get wrong, right? And so I remember watching the show, and the question went to this one sportscaster, and they said, in one game, two people hit back-to-back home runs. Who were they? said the name of the two teams. The guy took a guess because he knew two players on the team. He was wrong. So the question went to the Schwab, and he said, it's this guy and this guy. He said the first guy hit a home run to left field. It was about 430 feet far. The second guy got a hanging curve ball. It went over the right field fence just barely. And I remember listening. I'm like, there's no way he's right. The little host is like, yep, right, all of it. And I remember watching all of this game show. It didn't last very long because it wasn't very entertaining. The guy wasn't fun to watch. He was just incredibly smart. But as the show progressed, I remember thinking, this guy knows everything that's happened in all of these sports games, but he's never influenced any of those games. He's never thrown a no-hitter. He's never hit a home run. He might never have played sports. I have no idea. He has knowledge, but his knowledge has no impact. See, Jesus isn't just knowledge. It's not just he knows a bunch of stuff. He's not some cosmic computer that if you ask the right questions, it'll generate the right answer. He is knowledge. He is the one who spoke everything into existence. He is the one who upholds all of the world in his hands. He is the one who keeps everything functioning the way it's supposed to. He is the one who gives truth because he is truth. As he dispenses truth, he is giving of himself. That's why John, in John 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So the Word that we get is truth. He is all knowledge. So if he's a counselor, he's exceptional because he doesn't need guidance. He's also exceptional because he gives perfect guidance. Ever gotten bad advice? I feel like there's some teen illustration in there, right? Like when friends are like, do it, yeah, that won't hurt. And they're like, yep, every YouTube fail, right? Sometimes bad advice is humorous. Sometimes bad advice can be painful, right? Your financial advisor says, no, invest in this. It's a surefire investment. And then you lose all of your money and you're like, yeah, he's like, oh, misread that. I'm like, well, that wasn't good advice. You can go through life and you get advice and it's human speaking, right? So it could be good advice. It could be bad advice. I was reading an article about a man, I forget his last name, but when he grew up, he was good friends with a man named Mr. Sears. And one day, he was approached and said, listen, if you invest $500 in my company, I want to start a mail order company. And the man read all of the profile and everything. He goes, this business will never succeed. It'll never take off. So Sears went to a guy named Roebuck and got his $500, started a company called Sears and Roebuck. Now we look at Sears now and we think it's all falling apart, right? But when it started, it was an amazing company. It made millions upon millions of dollars. And I was reading this article about this guy, and he says, yeah, see, I looked at the thing, and I asked some people, and the advice was, don't waste $500. He goes, now, he's like, I wish I would have given him $10,000. Right? Sometimes we get bad advice. God never gives bad advice. Why? He is able to advise his people thoroughly because he is qualified in ways no human counselor is. How is God qualified to give us advice? He knows the past, he knows the present, and he knows the future. He not only knows what is best for you now, he also knows what is best for you in the future. Meaning he cannot give you bad advice. See, in Colossians 2:3 it says, in Christ is hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, including the knowledge of human nature. Psalms 139, verses 1 and 2. He is infinite in his knowledge. But Jesus is more than just infinite in his knowledge. He also knows mankind. See, Jesus always knows what we are going through. And he always knows the right course of action. Because Jesus was tempted in every way that man was, he knows the struggles of man. We have a gracious counselor who gives truth. Because he is all truth, he can give nothing less. So we get to the end of these two words, wonderful counselor. And really this morning, I'm not really giving out new truth. I'm not telling you something you probably haven't already heard about God. Maybe in a format, maybe a little different, maybe in the verse, maybe some things about the nouns or something maybe you didn't know. But really, the two words this morning are common. We know these things, right? But in the common truth of these two words is that deeply convicting thought. Do we really think God is a good counselor? And we go, yes, yes, Pastor Mike, we do. So let me ask you this. When you have a crisis in your life, who's the first person you go to for advice? How many times do we go to other people? How many times do we go to other things? If we really believe that God is the wonderful counselor He is, we would always go to Him first. Because what other advice could I get that would compare to that? Like, oh, Lord, I know, wonderful counselor. I got to check with my friends first. This concept of who God is reminds us that our heart loves to wander, even though we know better. We know what we're supposed to do. We're still like, oh. We still struggle with obedience. I don't care if you're here this morning, you've been saved for 50 or 60 years. Your heart wants to wander. Your heart wants to be in control. Which is why the Word of God constantly tells us to make Christ King of our life. One of the ways that we make Christ King of our life is to listen to His counsel. But it has to be more specific this morning than maybe than just listen to His counsel. Because sometimes when we listen to God's counsel, the stubbornness of our heart says, I heard you, but I'm still going to do it my own way. We go like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, Lord. I'll try that second. Right? If my plan doesn't work out, then yeah, you got a good option there, God. You see, it's easy to say that He's a wonderful counselor, but to be honest, it's hard to live that. Our pride, our selfishness always wants to jump up and take credit. This morning, let me just encourage you with this. When God speaks about your problems, when He speaks about your circumstances, when He speaks about the things in your life, He will always, always, always guide you in the right direction. We can be sure that He listens because in Philippians 4:6 and James 1:5, He tells us to give Him our worries and our troubles. We can be certain He has our best interest at heart because He loves us. 1 John 4, how big of a love? His love is wide and deep. The concept there is that His love is wonderful, incomprehensible. Romans 5:8, His love is so big you won't understand it. Because He's a good counselor, let's ask Him for advice. And when we hear His advice, let's just take it. Be easy. God says it, we obey it. Right? Man, you know how many messages I wouldn't have to preach if we all just did that? Right? And I'm not just talking about you, I'm talking about me. Because see, I get to study this all week long, and the Lord's like, you know, you could like get through a lot of this stuff in your life faster if you would just listen, right? Sometimes I feel like the Lord is talking to me like I talk to my kids. Hey, did you hear what I said? They look at me like, yeah, then why are you not doing what I said, right? And God's like, I'm pretty sure He's read that verse before, right? And sometimes, maybe God doesn't speak audibly in your head like God does to me. I chuckle because sometimes my conscience sounds like Morgan Freeman's voice, right? And God will be like, don't do that, right? Sometimes it sounds like Mr. T when I grew up from 18, you know, like Lord's like, quit it, you idiot, right? You know, He's like yelling at me in the back of my head. But He's speaking to me like, don't do this. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I go do it anyway, right? Because we're slow to learn. But God's a good counselor. And if he really is that good counselor, then we should be better listeners. This morning, today, maybe this week, try and just find some time and say to God, God, I'm going to come to you, but I don't want to ask for anything. I just want you to tell me what to do. I just want to listen to your advice. I'm going to read your word. I'm not reading your word so that I can check off the list. I'm not going to spend time in prayer just so I can say I've done it, but I'm just going to stop. I'm going to listen. Whatever you say, whatever you want me to do, it's a yes. I'll do it. Let's radically obey the wonderful counselor.